Sports for the win.
I'm Anthony Kay, and this is Sports Fluent. Remember to follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at sports_fluent, or subscribe to our YouTube channel, search Sports Fluent. As always, you can also visit our website at sportsfluent.com. To this week's episode, we have NFL predictions from the NFC North, the WNBA, and three teams are going to be previewed this week, the Mercury, the Mystics, and the Liberty. In our round two rapid fire NHL picks, I'm going to let you know who's winning this round and making it to the final four. I was 5-3 in the qualifying round and 5-3 in round number one. Let's see if I can go perfect this time. Then in the fix, the Philadelphia 76ers are on the hot seat as they begin their new process. It's about time. But before we get into all that, my special guest, Stuart Hart from the University of Nebraska. We're kicking off this week's show with good friend, Stuart Hart. He's the strength and conditioning coach at the University of Nebraska. We're going to talk about the NCAA's return to play for football, for basketball, and we're going to take a look inside the NBA bubble. And lastly, how much trash talk is too much trash talk? Here's that interview.
Hey, everybody. Anthony Kay here with the Sports Fluent Podcast. And I'm joined today by my special guest from the University of Nebraska, strength and conditioning coach, Stuart Hart. Stuart, how you doing, man?
I'm pretty good, brother. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I should say longtime friend. So we've known each other a long time. So in case we do any inside jokes, that's why. I want to jump right into the NCAA. So football obviously is something that they're deciding whether they're going to be playing. So I want to get your take on, do you think that do you think basketball is going to be kicking off? How is it being affected by what the football decisions are? So let's start there.
So I guess I should start off by saying I'm a strength and conditioning coach for basketball.
Yes.
Here in Nebraska. So, originally from Toronto, moved down here for a basketball scholarship, and I've been living in the States ever since. So now I'm employed at the University of Nebraska as a strength and conditioning coach. And obviously with everything going on as far as COVID, football is kind of leading the way, being the dominant fall sport. And, a couple conferences, Big Ten, they've made the decision that they're not going to have sports. So, basketball is considered a winter sport. So we're still kind of waiting to see where the NCAA is going to come down and then how they're going to impact, or influence what the individual conferences decide to do.
But do they have a timeline on what they're going to do for their winter sports yet?
They haven't. And I guess the best answer I can give you in regards to that was, football basically starts right at the beginning of the school year. And, a week or two prior to the start of the school year, they made the decision to not have sports. So, if we're using that as a precedent, they might not tell us until maybe a week or two before the season's supposed to start. So
is Nebraska football then not – they're not playing?
Yeah, the Big Ten Conference has decided they're not going to play. And I think SEC is obviously trying to have a season, and I believe the ACC as well.
So there was talk about, though, having spring, like moving the fall sports to the spring.
Yeah.
Have they – is that still kind of just an open discussion?
Open discussion. And it's pretty much a fluid situation. It's every day you're waiting for some sort of new insight in regards to it. If you go back to when COVID originally hit and they shut down the NCAA tournament, so both on the men's side and the women's side, since March and up until basically August, they've been trying to figure out, okay, how bad is the COVID situation? How is each individual school handling it? Obviously, with the Big Ten footprint, we've got multiple states involved. So, it's very much dependent on the state that you're in. It's very much dependent on what your governor of that particular state, the politics, if you will, how they're influencing with the universities. Because a lot of the universities are state institutions. So they've got to abide by both state and local mandates. So, it's pretty much just waiting to see what each individual state and or school in those particular states are dealing with. And then what the NCAA, what decision the NCAA makes based on that.
So what's your take on it? So if they were your kids,
yeah,
right? Student, I know this is the thing with NCAA, right? They're student athletes. So some students aren't going back, should the athletes?
Yeah. my personal take is, if, you know, putting the student first, you got to put the well-being of the student first, student athlete first.
Right.
And if it's not safe for, you know, students to be on campus or student athletes to participate in activities, if you can't provide a safe environment for them to be able to participate, then it doesn't make any sense for you to, you know, have any sort of organized sports. Now, there's the medical and or personal feeling behind that, but then there's also the economics of college sports. Football right. is a major economic driver for a lot of the Power Five schools. It pretty much funds most of the athletic department, and it funds most of sometimes even the institution itself. So they're obviously taking a hit by not having sports. So you get that side of it.
Right. That's really the big question, right? Is you're trying to balance, as any student athlete is, school life and the sport that you're playing or giving you the scholarship and the opportunity to go to that school. Yeah. And the school's trying to balance, you know, in a lot of cases where the football and basketball is really funding some of the other sports and some of the other, like you said, the school in general.
Sure.
So how do you, you know, that's a thin line there that you don't want to cross. How do you do that? So from your standpoint,
the right answer to that is, you know, in regards to how you do that, you manage the information and you make your decision based on the best information you have available to you. And that's where I think the professional leagues, if we're using the models that they're using, you know, obviously being a professional league, they've got probably a couple more resources than we do at the collegiate level, and not every institution is in the same financial situation. And I think that plays a lot into the decision-making of the presidents and the ADs that are involved. It's like, okay, I want to be able to provide maybe a bubble situation, but can I really afford to do that the way that it really needs to be done the correct way? And maybe I'll just use the Big Ten. Maybe one institution can do it, but three others in the same conference can't do it. So how viable is it for you to actually have a season or, you know, in whatever sport, whether it's basketball or football, if, you know, three out of your 14 schools in your conference can't provide the same experience.
Right. And does that, so even if some do come back, so obviously there's some that have decided they are going to come back and play. They're just coming back to play really for, you know, there isn't a, can there be a champion, a national champion at the end of all this? If only half of the teams, if 25% of the teams play, you know, there's some, we talked about some schools that are going to do spring. Are they just playing games to play games to say, hey, that's what they're here to do as part of their kind of scholarship?
Yeah.
You can't have a national champion if not everyone's in it, right?
Yeah. Especially if you have one conference that's having their season or some form of their season in the fall, and then another group is having, you know, their season in the spring. And I think that's where the logistics of everything, whether it's on the individual conference level or the national level, when you're dealing with the actual NCAA, how they're going to actually make it work and facilitate a national championship, you know, obviously that's way above my pay grade. Now I'm sitting back just like everybody else trying to figure out how it's going to happen. I'd love to see a national championship. I think everybody would. But again, you have to put the well-being of the student athlete and support staff and coaches first.
Yeah, for sure. You know, that's, I think that's one thing that, you know, not that it doesn't affect younger people, because it COVID does, but obviously it has a worse effect on the coaches. The coaches in some cases are, or in all cases, are the oldest guys and girls in the building. They're the ones that actually are going to be affected by this most, and we got to think of their safety too. So you mentioned kind of a bubble situation. So obviously I think the NBA and the NHL have had a lot of success with their bubble.
Right.
Major League Baseball, not so much. So is there a scenario, like, are you guys looking at the pro sports and saying, hey, how can we make this work? Because in college sports, you can't really say, hey, let's all go to this one school and sit around for 2 months and have a season, right? That's not realistic.
Yes.
So what are you learning from the pro sports?
Everything right now is on the table. I've heard bubble situation. We all meet. We only do it for conference. We all meet in one central location. And we, you know, facilitate a conference game situation where, you know, obviously you got your athletes, they got to take classes, but everything's online right now. So that's one location. I've heard regional locations, everybody meets at that one location. You play 3 to 4 games, whatever it is. You go back home and then meet at another location and you try. Just, again, this is just to get through the conference.
Right.
And then the bubble situation where, you know, you basically bubble everybody at home, whether it's you find a local hotel, you put everybody in that one location, and you try to make it a safe environment for everybody else. Again, everything is on the table right now. A lot of it is being dictated by, again, the individual states, the schools, what resources they have, what can everybody do that we can have some sort of uniform expectation and or experience. Yeah.
And buy-in.
Right?
Because with professional athletes, I think, I don't want to say it's easier, but hey, we're paying you millions of dollars. This is what we need. Right. For a student, right, you're getting a scholarship, but you're 18, 19, 20 years old.
22.
You're telling me stay in?
Yeah.
I'm having a problem staying in. Like, my intentions are good, but that'd be kind of tough.
Yeah, that's what we saw in the media with the UNC and a couple of these schools.
Right.
That, you know, the initial wave of campus college athletes or college students come back on campus and somebody's throwing a party and you got, you know, 100 to 150 people in an apartment. Nobody's wearing masks, but they're being college students. You know what I mean? They're doing exactly what they would do.
Yeah, exactly.
Between the ages of 18 and 22. Is it the right thing for them to do? No, but at that age, you're not necessarily thinking about the long-term or even the short-term repercussions.
Think about today. So, exactly, for sure.
Which is where the bubble, you have some more control. But again, you're still expecting them to be mature and make the right decisions. But as much control as you can have as a coaching staff, as a, you know, an athletic department, because you're, again, responsible for what these athletes have to go through. You know, that those are the things that we're trying to figure out.
Yeah. You never know who's going to make a run to Magic City for some wings, right?
I'm hoping they don't, but yeah.
I hear they're good. I hear they're good. So I need to try sometime. But all right. So let's kind of shift a little bit to the NBA. So, right. Basketball coach, you played basketball. Is there any rooting interest in any teams in the NBA?
From Toronto, you know, I'm still, you know, I got my Raptors in there. Clippers, I love Kawhi Leonard. Loving what Dame is doing with Portland. But as far as do I have a, you know, obviously everybody's rooting for LeBron. I'm not necessarily the biggest LeBron fan or Laker fan. I'm more of a LeBron fan than a Laker fan. So I'd like to see him be successful. But I'll say if you actually had to hold me down and pick one, I'd probably go with Toronto.
You think Toronto gets the repeat?
Yeah.
You know, Kyle Lowry got hurt yesterday.
I did see that.
So as long as he's healthy, I think they'll be all right. It doesn't hurt when you get 100 points off the bench. It's hard to lose.
Right. That's what I'm saying. They got a strong bench, and that's what you got a bench for. So
yeah,
I still think they got a pretty good shot, though.
So something else happened in the NBA, and I wanted to talk to you about it because when the stuff happened with George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and the protests started, and you and I had a conversation about that, and it brought up some bigger issues and things that everybody needed to talk about race. And that's important.
Yeah.
And then in the NBA, now since then, I will say this, Montrezl Harrell, I can't quote him directly. However, I believe he rebounded, went up and scored against Luka Doncic. And as he was running back, I believe, if you believe the lip readers, they say he said, BS white boy.
Okay.
And there was a lot of people that came out and said, hey, if the tables were turned and it was reversed and it was Luca saying that to him, right? Whole different conversation.
Yeah. Oh, every morning would be
right. Now, since then, I was going to say, since then, Montrez did go up to Luca before the game, I believe yesterday, and apologize and said, hey, it was the heat of the moment.
Right.
So the reason I wanted to talk to you about it is obviously we had that discussion on race. You and I played basketball together. You know, I was bringing up before we started recording about when we were in Hawaii, we went out like Woody and Wesley looking for games with people. We talked a lot of trash as we were playing.
Right.
So is that just heat of the moment? It's trash talk. We need to be less sensitive? Or is there more to it that, hey, now we got to be careful what we say? Because the two biggest ones I see, trash talk on the court, because I love trash talking. Even my men's league, they tell me I never shut up.
Mm-hmm.
And comedy. Those are the two things that used to be, hey, you just let them, you know, it's the heat of the moment and it's comedy, let it go. We've become more sensitive to that. So is it, hey, that was heat of the moment, let it go? Or is it something that athletes, especially student athletes too, right? Is it something they need to pay closer attention to, like what you say in the heat of the moment and that trash talk? Does that need to change?
I would say on the college level, I find that your officials are paying closer attention to that sort of behavior. Men's game, women's game is kind of the same. But any sort of trash talking, any sort of, you know, gesture towards the opponent after a basket in the heat of the moment of a game, like they try to correct that as best they can. At the pro level, you find there's a little bit more latitude there. And maybe the officials, you know, with everything that they have to do, they're not necessarily paying attention to that. So you get a little bit more. Now, within the context of where we're at right now, race relations,
yeah,
you know, treatment of African Americans by police officers, language that may be, potentially be used that is inflammatory. I feel like you have to be a little bit more conscious and or cognizant of what your behaviors are and what you get caught saying, especially on national TV, especially at that level as a pro. Now, that being said, trash talking is still part of the game, but roles reverse if the N-word was then thrown. It's a heated debate. It's a heated discussion. It's a long tweet, you know,
right,
accepting responsibility and, you know, some sort of, okay, I'm going to try to do better. So I just think just the nature of the way things are and the direction that we're trying to move and or change the direction of the country, I just feel like you have to be a little bit more conscious of what you say, how you say it, whether it's the heat of the moment or not.
Yeah. Like, yeah, there was, and I apologize, I should have been ready for this. There was a WNBA game, right, where one of the players looked at the other and kind of said, okay, I'll see you in the lobby later.
Right.
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 No one talked about that much, but you know, that's something that we do, right? That's something that we say. It's again, it's in the heat of the moment. The amount of times that actually happens where you meet in the lobby later, I think is few and far between, but
it does happen.
Yeah, for sure. It does. So the last thing I want to talk to you about, because today when we're recording this is, I guess, officially, at least in California or LA, is Kobe Bryant Day.
Yeah.
You and I grew up watching Kobe. Any kind of memories, thoughts on Kobe? Like, obviously, he kicked off this 2020, right? We knew it was going to be bad when that happened, and it's just, I think, gotten worse ever since.
Downhill.
Thoughts
on Kobe are, you know, put him up there amongst the greatest in the game. You know, you say we grew up watching Kobe. Obviously, prior to him, it was Michael Jordan. And the thing about Kobe, he's the greatest thing since Michael Jordan that has come the closest to emulating what Jordan did on the court. And for that, you have to give him the kudos and respect. But I think he created his own lane also just in regards to the Mamba mentality and his relationship with, you know, especially being a strength coach on the women's side here, his relationship with, because of his daughter at WNBA and women's basketball and what he's done to champion that. You just got to remember the man. You know, he was an excellent dude. Obviously, he made his mistakes, as we all do. Yeah. But the legacy that he's leaving behind and the things that he was able to accomplish in the league and the lives that he was able to impact, you have to remember him. And if the birthday is when we're going to – I'd much rather remember the birthday than remember the death. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, fair enough.
Yeah.
I think we have the birthday. It's you know, probably fitting, right? The birthday is 8/23. And then the Kobe day is 8/24. So we get to, you know, this week we're doing a lot of Kobe week stuff, right? And talking about that Mamba mentality and how to do better, be better. And that was kind of his whole mantra. And it relates to not just basketball, but life in general, where we need to do better. So speaking of doing better, I'm seeing you in the gym a lot, seeing you with your team in the gym a lot, strength by heart.
Tell me
about what you guys are doing, how you're preparing for hopefully this season when it comes up. And
The best answer to that question is we're doing what we're supposed to do, and we've been blessed in being able to do what we would typically do, obviously with some changes because of COVID, but just within the footprint of the Big Ten, not every school, depending on whatever state you were in, was able to bring their athletes back. We were able, our athletes went home basically about the middle of March, and then we were able through, not just on the institutional level, but from the NCAA, they were allowed to come back and go through voluntary workouts. So I have my athletes back here about June 1st. And we roughly had about 6 weeks of training, which is what we would typically have in summer anyway. But just because of Nebraska, the limited number of cases, comparably speaking to other places in the country, we felt comfortable and our administration felt comfortable in bringing our athletes back, and the NCAA allowed it and the Big Ten allowed it. Great summer, man. It's been nice to have my team back. We've got, you know, 7 new players on the roster. We've got a couple of international kids from Australia, and just dealing with that, and you know, them having to.
So they had to kind of quarantine or come over quarantine, and then oh wow.
Yeah. So and then even some of the protocols that we put in place, even our athletes that were out of state. It didn't really matter what state they were coming from. They still had to go through a quarantine situation when they stepped back on campus. So we were very careful, mindful, you know, wearing the masks, trying to make sure everybody's washing hands before, wiping down equipment in between sets, reps, and that sort of thing. We had a successful summer.
Oh, that's good. So Nebraska obviously then didn't get hit as hard
as hard. Yeah, we had cases. Don't ask me the number. I just know comparative speaking to the other schools within the footprint of the Big Ten, we had a limited number of cases. So.
Okay. Well, that's good. I'm glad you're keeping safe and doing well. Yeah. It was nice catching up with you, man. I hope we'll talk again soon.
For sure. Let's do it again.
All right, man.
From the NCAA to professional football. As I mentioned this week in the NFL predictions, it's my favorite division, the NFC North. Yes, I'm a big fan of the Bears. But don't get it twisted. That's not going to stop me from being overly critical on my Bears offense. I love their defense, but their offense is something that has always been a concern. Even back in Super Bowl 20, it was a concern. And throughout the years, it's always been a defensive-led team. And that's no different this year, as bringing in free agent Robert Quinn to be on the other side of Khalil Mack is going to make chaos for the opposing quarterbacks. This defense is going to be strong. It's going to keep them in games. And all they need from either Mitch Trubisky or Nick Foles, whoever gets the start, is really to be a game manager, make the right plays, and make very few mistakes. Is Nick Foles the guy to do it, or is he the one to push Mitch Trubisky and give him the jolt that he needs to be that quarterback? The tough side is there's really not a lot of offensive weapons, or at least proven offensive weapons, other than Allen Robinson, who I love. Anthony Miller is a great piece, and we like his game, but can he stay healthy and on the field? Tariq Cohen, as we know, is great out of the backfield, catching balls on gadget plays, etc. He's a great change of pace. Can David Montgomery take the next step up and be that featured back in the Bears' offense? I like a lot of the things they did at tight end. Too many on their roster, obviously, unless Coach Nagy has some type of four tight end set that I haven't heard of before. But other than that, I think the Jimmy Graham, although I was confused by the signing, but the Jimmy Graham and the Cole Kemet out of Notre Dame, the rookie, are going to be really good safety valves for Trubisky or Foles. So look for this offense to be improved over last year. And everything out of Bears camp suggests that Trubisky has taken a step forward. I'm going to shock everyone and start the prediction off with the Bears finishing at 9-7 and possibly a wild card spot. From the Bears, we go to another team that has had its ups and downs throughout the years, the Detroit Lions. When Matt Patricia came over, everyone thought he would quickly implement the Patriot way and the Lions would be the toast of the NFC North. That didn't happen. And in fact, his strength, defense, was one of the biggest problems that they had last year. And prior to Matthew Stafford going down with a back injury, he was looking like an MVP, and the only issue they really had was their defense. So this year, can Stafford come back? Can he be healthy? Can he achieve what he was doing last year before the injury? And can that defense step up and give them any kind of help? Because if they do, this team could actually be scary. However, not that scary my prediction, because I got them finishing at 5-11. They're going to be at the bottom of this division. Next up is the Minnesota Vikings. Now, there's no question at quarterback for the Vikings. Kirk Cousins is there. He's signed to a long-term deal. Now, you might love that. You might hate that. Personally, I'm not a big fan. I think the loss of Stephon Diggs is actually going to be huge for this team as well, although they're still pretty solid at wide receiver. They're obviously taking care of a running back, but for some reason, I just don't like the team as a whole finishing above 500. I've got them at 7-9. Part of that is I know that Coach Mike Zimmer does not like to rely on rookies, and he's got two in the secondary that he's going to have to play a lot. That scares me about their defense. So while I think this team will be able to score, I don't think they're going to be able to stop anybody. And that will be the reason that they finish at 7-9 at best. Now I'm going to tell you, the last team, the team that's going to finish at 12-4, perhaps 11-5. Let's go 12-4. The Green Bay Packers. It pains me to say that. As a Bears fan, it kills me to say that. But the Packers are still the toast of the division. As long as Aaron Rodgers is under center, they will be the team to beat in the NFC North. However, bringing in Jordan Love can either hurt or help this team. Now, if it helps them, it's because it gives Aaron Rodgers a shot in the arm. He understands that there's a quarterback who's nipping at his heels, and he starts to play his best football, or at least one last run of great football. The problem is, Coach LaFleur has brought in A.J. Dillon, a huge running back, kind of like what he had with Derrick Henry in Tennessee. Now, does Green Bay's offense turn more into a zone running play action type of offense? That remains to be seen. Last year, Rodgers did use play action more than he had in the past, which isn't one of his strengths. And he has so many strengths, this isn't one of them. Why they would do that more obviously tells you there's some kind of disconnect between coach and quarterback. So look for the Green Bay to have a great season either way, although you might see some tension on the sidelines between Coach LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers. So let's recap. We have the Packers winning the division at 12-4. The Bears at 9-7. Possibly, I'm going to put an asterisk there, possibly 10-6, and fighting, if not getting, the wild card spot. And then you have the Minnesota Vikings finishing at best 8-8. My prediction is 7-9. And then you have the 5-11 Detroit Lions. Let me know what you think. Anthony K at sportsfluent.com.
We're one of the most exciting teams in the entire league. Griner, she's one of the most dominant players. We have Diana Taurasi. We have newcomers in Skylar Diggins and Shatori Walker Kimbrough, Bria Hartley, Kia Vaughn, and Nita Coffey, which is going to bring us so much athleticism to the outside, great rebounders. If you want to see some high-intensity basketball, I would definitely say tune in to Mercury Games this season.
Now that's why the Phoenix Mercury believe you should follow them this season. But here's what I think. This team is in a position where they can kind of go either way. The big question is, can Diana Taurasi stay healthy? She's in her 16th season in the league, and at 38 years old, will her body hold up? Last season, she suffered through a few injuries. She only played 6 games, and it made it very difficult because when she's not on the court, it makes it a lot harder to win. They finished 15-19 last year, 8th in the league, and they lost to the Chicago Sky in the first round. If they can't stay healthy, expect the same, kind of middle of the pack and a first-round exit. However, if she can stay healthy, she can put the ball in the hoop, and she's a very good playmaker. Add her to Griner and Diggins-Smith, and you have a formidable big three that could get the job done. Also, Diggins-Smith is another one who can score and can facilitate. And that's exactly what you need when you have a big like Griner. The three of them could be excellent together. So we look for them to see, can they play together? Can they stay healthy? And can they drive the Mercury deep into the playoffs?
You should support us because we're going to play a fun type of basketball. We're going to share the ball. We don't care who the star of the show is going to be in any given night. So it'll be a bit like Golden State, whereas everyone's working together, ball movement, player movement. It's just going to be exciting. It's going to be a lot of up and down, fast paced. So obviously we're also the defending champions. So we've got something, got a target on our back. So we've got to lift our game again. So come support the Washington Mystics. Make sure you tune in on TV or on the app, and we'd love to have you supporting us.
So that's what the Washington Mystics think is the reason you should follow the Washington Mystics and be a fan of theirs. However, they have an uphill battle this year. Defending champs have a target on their back and always find it difficult to repeat. Very few teams, even if they bring back all of their players, are able to defend their title. In fact, in the WNBA, only 2 teams have ever repeated, the 97 through 2000 Houston Comets and the 01-02 Los Angeles Sparks. It's been 8 years, and it's been 18 years for a reason. It's really hard to do. Now, the Mystics will have to do it, coming off of a 26-8 season where they won a championship, but have lost four of their starting five. Only Ariel Atkins is returning. Ella Del Don is gone. Natasha Cloud is gone. LaToya Sanders and Christy Tolliver all gone from the team for 2020. If I'm making a prediction, look for the Mystics to take a huge step back this season and unfortunately not be able to defend their title. Good luck to them, however. And our last team that we're going to review is the New York Liberty. So let's hear from them on why you should follow and be a fan of the Liberty.
Well, I think obviously we're going to play a really fast style of play. You're going to see a lot of threes, which is always exciting. We're going to have people playing in different positions. Think a little bit like the Warriors. You got shooters everywhere. It's going to be a lot of knockdown. We have a great color. Seafoam is the only unique color in the WNBA. Don't sleep on it. We have Sabrina Ionescu, obviously an incredibly exciting player coming up. And we got seven rookies who are all exciting. You need to watch them all. And I'm there. And we love seeing new shoes. I got lots of shoes for you.
So that's what the New York Liberty think. What do I think? I think it's really hard to win in any league. They were 10-24 last season and didn't qualify for the playoffs. This team is going to be good. I just don't think it's this year. They have seven rookies and a new head coach. That's a lot of turnover to bring into a team in a very difficult situation in a bubble. So there's a lot of questions. How seamlessly does Sabrina Ionescu translate to the WNBA game? Will she just step right in and be the superstar everyone thinks she's going to be? Or will it take some time? We know that she is an elite scorer, a great facilitator, with great basketball IQ, and there's no reason why she shouldn't be able to step right in. However, as I mentioned, seven rookies. So you can't just rely on one player. So how do those other players meld together, and does this team gel, and can they create some type of cohesive unit very quickly in a bubble to be competitive? I don't think this is the year for the Liberty, so look for a lot of kind of feeling out. I think you're going to see some great moments from the team, but not one kind of consistent long run to push them into the playoffs. However, this is a team that I would watch over the next few years because they're going to be very good. Now to the NHL and my rapid fire picks. In the qualifying round, I was 5-3. In round one, I was 5-3. So now out of these four series, here's who I got. First off, Philadelphia against the New York Islanders. The Islanders are a team that I thought were going to lose to the Capitals, although I did tell you the Capitals had issues and they wouldn't make it to the final four. So I was right about the Capitals. I was just wrong in which round that they were going to lose. So we have the Islanders and the Flyers. But I'm sticking with my pick of the Flyers making it into the Final Four. So I've got the Flyers in a long series, probably seven games, taking out the New York Islanders. Then to the Stars and the Avalanche. The Stars, another team that I picked to lose. However, they're up against a good Colorado Avalanche team. I have the Avalanche going deep into these playoffs. However, what they've shown me so far isn't that great. So I'm going to flip my way too early pick of the Colorado Avalanche, and I'm going to go with the Dallas Stars coming out on top of this series. Then to Vancouver and Vegas. I liked Vegas early on, and I'm going to stick with Vegas to knock out the Canucks. It has nothing to do that I was wrong in the last round, but I like the Golden Knights. I like the way that they play. I think they're going to be solid. They are one of my Final Four teams. So I've got the Knights going through to the next round over the Vancouver Canucks. To the last series, the Boston Bruins against the Tampa Bay Lightning. I had this one pegged from the beginning, and I'm going to stick with my team, the Boston Bruins, coming out on top of this one. So to recap, my rapid fire NHL picks for round number two, we're going with Flyers, Bruins, Stars, Golden Knights. Let me know what you think. Anthony K at sportsfluent.com. Now for the fix. This week in the fix, we have the Philadelphia 76ers. The 76ers went through the process, and that was supposed to make them great. And when you look at their roster, it should be. Over the last few years, they should be one of the best teams in the NBA, definitely one of the best teams in the East. Last year, however, did the Toronto Raptors destroy that team, or did they expose that team for what's wrong with it? Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons are a problem as individual players. However, do they go well together? Everyone thought Jimmy Butler was the problem, and they shipped him off to Miami. He doesn't seem to be the problem in Miami. In fact, he seems to be the solution. So maybe it wasn't Jimmy Butler. They've got some good pieces around, but here's the problem. Everyone's going to blame Brett Brown, including the team. That's why they fired him. But I don't know that it's Brett Brown's fault. Do I agree with the way he coached the team? No. Do I think he could have put in a better system for the players that he had? Yes. But blaming Brett Brown for the fact that Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons shouldn't be paired together is like blaming the glass that the oil and water don't mix. It's just an excuse. The reality is, these two guys do not play ball the way that is meant to be played together. As individuals, they're both great. I like Ben Simmons' game. Obviously, I would like if he could shoot some threes. And I like Joel Embiid's game. But I wish he would talk less, work out more. So what did the Philadelphia 76ers have to do? Well, step one was fire Brett Brown. They did need to do that. They do need to change the culture in Philadelphia. However, the biggest part and the hardest part to do is they're going to have to pick either Embiid or Simmons and build around them. So I'm going to give you my take on that. I would trade Embiid. Embiid is a player that I think you can get a lot for because he's probably the more well-rounded player than Simmons at this point in their career. Simmons still has a ton of potential, but the lack of outside shooting will scare teams away, which would make Embiid more attractive to other NBA teams or suitors for his services. Trade him away and do what the teams should have done around LeBron and what the Bucks tried to do around Giannis. Surround him with some big three-point shooters and let him run the floor as a point forward, as it were. You put him at the three, go with a higher-paced offense where he can do what he does best, which is drive, dish, and take it to the hole. That's what he does as he develops an outside shot. The more his outside shot develops, the more scarier he will be as a player, and the tougher that team will be to play against. However, the way that it's constructed now, it's clearly not working. So if it's me and I'm the GM, I'm going with Simmons and putting three-point shooting around him and going with a more up-paced style. That's where the NBA is going anyways, so let's do that. When you have Simmons and Embiid together, they both just kind of get in each other's way and clogging up the lane. And it's either Embiid has to go out and shoot threes, which you really don't want him to do, although he can, or you leave Simmons out there and they just slack off him and force him to beat you by shooting, which he won't. So if you have a varying opinion, if you think they can work together, tell me how. If you think Embiid should be the one that stays and Simmons goes, tell me why. I look forward to hearing from you. I'm your host, Anthony Kay, and remember to follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at sports_fluent. Also, subscribe to YouTube at sportsfluent, or always check out our website, sportsfluent.com. Until next week, are you fluent?